translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Bhadaharidas and Chotaharidas, the 24th and 25th devotees in Nilachal, were good singers who always accompanied Lord Chaitanya. Purport, it's a very small purport. Chotaharidas was later banished from the company of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as stated in the Antalila, chapter 2. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So my respectful obeisances to His Holiness Srila Radharaman Swami Maharaj for allowing me to speak today. This weekend is the Radharaman weekend. Yesterday we had the Swami, and today you have the Das. So actually what I'm going to do is, yesterday Maharaj spoke about some very intricate parts of this chapter, and since hearing you speak yesterday, I've thought about basing my talk on the points that you mentioned yesterday. So I'm going to give a commentary on the class yesterday given by His Holiness Radharaman Swami. That way I'll be more comfortable to speak in His presence. So the translation once again, be very attentive to this because it's such a deep topic, and I'll try my best to share some points. Bhadaharidas and Chotaharidas, the 24th and 25th devotees in Nilachal, were good singers who always accompanied Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So within here, we understand that there are two Haridases mentioned. So before I get into the purport, to elaborate on the purport, just to be very clear, it seems that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there were three Haridases and not two. Yeah? So there was Haridas Thakur, who's differentiated quite clearly from the senior and the junior Haridas. So just so that if you're wondering whether this translation is in reference to Haridas Thakur and then the Chota Haridas, it's not the case. So in Madhyalila, we find that there were two musicians known as the senior and the junior Haridas. And both of them were constant companions of Govinda. So Govinda, you'll know, was the disciple of Ishwarapuri. And before Ishwarapuri was about to leave this mortal world, he asked Govinda. Govinda was his personal servant. So he asked Govinda for him to now go and become the personal servant of Mahaprabhu. So this was the personality, Govinda. And such a great personality. In fact, Mahaprabhu, he complained. He said that because Govinda is the personal servant of my spiritual master, Ishwarapuri, therefore I can't accept any service from him. Because he is worshipable. The personal servant of the spiritual master is honorable. And therefore Mahaprabhu had a very difficult time in trying to accept Govinda as the personal servant. So this was the elevated position of Govinda. Now this Govinda was the Lord and the Master of the Bara and the Chota Haridas. And we'll find later on in Chaitanya Charitamrita how they were extremely intimately connected. So what this means is that Chota Haridas, from the very beginning, was always greatly favored by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is a very important point to remember. Because as we get into the pastime of Chota Haridas, we need to constantly reflect on the association that he had and the great mercy that he constantly was receiving by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by giving the responsibility of these two individuals to Govinda. So it's a very important point to mention. He was just not a random devotee who would just turn up and sing or be responsive. In the Madhyalila, during the Rathiyatra, you'll remember that there were four groups that were devised. And in these four groups, there were four dancers. So Haridas Thakur was one of those dancers, along with Nityananda Prabhu, Vakreshwara Pandit, and Advaita Acharya. Now, in these four groups, the three Haridasas were all split. Okay, so here further again, we understand that there were three Haridasas in total. And the Bara Haridas and the Chota Haridas mentioned in this verse were responsive singers in two of the groups. Okay, so in the group wherein Mukunda was leading the kirtan, the Bara Haridas was responding. And then in the group where Govinda was leading the kirtan, Chota Haridas was the person who would respond. Okay, so I just wanted to make it very clear with regards to who the personalities are being spoken of in this verse. And also Haridas Thakur was the 20th branch of the tree, whereas here we're describing the 23rd, 24th, etc. So the pastime is mentioned by Kaviraj Goswami of Chota Haridas, only somebody who is dhira or who's sober can actually understand or contemplate the mercy received by Chota Haridas in reference to the so-called rejection of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are some words which are also used in the English translation, in the English language, that sometimes don't perfectly fit the Bengali or the Sanskrit description. And this is a limitation not either by a translator or by a commentary, but it's a limitation due to language. And also this point, I think, is also very important to mention, because we'll understand later on that did Chota Haridas actually commit what we call suicide? Suicide is the best word that we can describe in English when it means to intentionally give up your body. But in Sanskrit, there are many, many types of ways to do so. So we later on come to understand the type that Chota Haridas Thakur accepted as part of his way to gain the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So these are some points I wanted to be very clear about. And in doing so, we'll try to understand more a little bit about the context of this pastime. So despite, obviously, Kaviraj Goswami explaining that one needs to be dhira in order to understand this pastime, I'm definitely not somebody who can speak on this. But what I'll do is I'll try to paraphrase some of the translations that Prabhupada has shared in Antalila to shed some light. So all of us know that this pastime took place in Nilachal, Jagannath Puri, where one devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Bhagwan Acharya, was residing there. Now, Bhagwan Acharya is the key person who began this entire leela between Chota Haridas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, Bhagwan Acharya, it's very important to note a little bit about him. Now, I'm not going to go too much into this, but Bhagwan Acharya had a brother called Gopal Bhatta Acharya. Yeah. Now, Gopal Bhatta Acharya had just returned from Varanasi, Banaras, the city of Mahadev, of Lord Shiva. And he had returned having understood and learned the Vedanta Sutra with the commentary of Shankara, Kodi Sharedika Bhashya. So when Gopal Bhattacharya, the brother of Bhagwan Acharya, had arrived in Puri, there was a suggestion for the devotees of Mahaprabhu to listen to Gopal Bhattacharya, the Sharedika Bhashya. Now immediately, Swarup Dhamodar chastised Bhagwan Acharya and embarrassed him, asking him, how dare you even suggest that Sharedik Bhashya can be discussed amongst the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, he said that Bhagwan Acharya, if you consider yourself a devotee, then just the contemplation of thinking that you can speak and talk about Sharedik Bhashya would be more like suicide. So that would be the mentality of a devotee. What to speak of suggest that your brother, who's returned from Varanasi, having graduated in Vedanta, can come and speak to our assembly. So just try to understand a bit about the mentality of Bhagwan Acharya. He doesn't seem as if at this particular point he was completely clear about the quality and about the advanced nature of the devotees of Mahaprabhu. And Bhagwan Acharya, obviously, naturally, by serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and as part of the pastime, the wider pastime, he came to understand the quality and the importance and the very, very high position of the Vaishnavas. This Bhagwan Acharya was the one who would cook for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Nilachal. And There were two types of prasads which were being cooked in Nilachal. The first was the one which was offered to Lord Jagannath, which was called prasadi. And then the second prasad in Jagannath Puri is the prasad which is cooked at home and offered to the home deity. So Bhagwan Acharya would do sometimes bit of both. Okay, he would do some bit of both. And Bhagwan Acharya, at one particular point, he had the desire to cook Mahaprabhu's favorite vegetables and his favorite rice, which for those a bit like my wife who were Ayurvedic doctors, wasn't brown rice. It was white rice. So this was Mahaprabhu's favorite rice. And I think some of you probably also prefer white rice as well. So Shukla Chaul was the preferred rice cooked by Bhagwan Acharya. Shri Radha Gokulnanda Bhagwan ki jai. Shri Sita Mahanamana ki jai. Shri Gaunithai ki jai. So he asked Chota Haridas. Chota Haridas would sing daily to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he said to Chota Haridas, could you do me a favor? Could you please go and ask the sister of Shikhi Mahiti, the sister of Shikhi Mahiti, for some rice. He asked for aman, which is a particular type of weight used in West Bengal, in Jagannath Puri and that part of India. So Chota Haridas thought, okay, you know, if Bhagwan Acharya, who is the cook of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, desires to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he's asked me to be an instrument of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feast, then he had no choice but to go and ask for the rice. Now, Chota Haridas was a Brahmin, which means that he comes from a lineage of culture. Culture is something which is not created. Culture is something which cannot be formed. Culture is something which is learnt from others. Which is why you find that in the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, and obviously Chaitanya Charitamrita as well, you find that there's no debate about culture. Culture is something which comes from time immemorial. And the values that one possesses when one is born in a particular family are the natural values of two kinds. The firstly is, those are the values that one deserves according to the previous karma. And therefore, even if one, after being born in a particular family, tries to change some of their cultural attitude, sometimes it's very difficult. Some of the more gross aspects of culture, like for example, the eating of vegetarian food or meat, is very easy to change. Because in the Vedic culture, these are known as sinful activities. But culture, which is Sanskriti, how you respond in anger, how you respond in adversity, how one responds when the intimate partners or family members are against them, how one responds in natural calamities and the environment, how one responds with their own challenges in life. This is called culture. And this is something which is inherent. It is the way one reacts according to the stage of life that they cultivated previously, and also what they see when they're growing up. So Chota Haridas was extremely pure, very smart, very knowledgeable, and knew things as they are. Which is why Bhagwan Acharya said to Chota Haridas, you go and ask for the rice in my name. You see? So what does this mean? This means that if Chota Haridas Thakur, being a Vairagi, is doubtful of approaching somebody who he shouldn't really be approaching, just in case Chota Haridas Thakur is doubtful of this, Bhagwan Acharya said to him, go and do so on my behalf. It is making sense. He's asking Chota Haridas Thakur, you go and do this service, which you're probably not happy to do anyway, because you're a Vairagi. Or in other words, asking a lady for rice. Because in the Vedic culture, there's very strict laws with regards to different ashrams. So therefore, Bhagwan Acharya said, you go and ask on my behalf. And then Chota Haridas Thakur, at least within his mind and heart, he was pacified. That in his name, he would go and ask for the rice. So is this all making sense? That Chota Haridas Thakur wasn't enthusiastic to go and ask for the rice. He was already convinced. He was already being convinced through the words, the choicest words, that were used by Bhagwan Acharya. So I'm going into the finer detail on purpose, so that we can understand the, whether the reaction that Mahaprabhu gave Chota Haridas Thakur was justified, and if it wasn't justified, why did it actually happen? What was the purpose and the intent of Mahaprabhu engage in Chota Haridas Thakur in this pastime. So as we all know, Chota Haridas, then he went over to Madhavi Devi, who was the sister of Shakhi Mahiti. Now, Madhavi Devi was an 84-year-old tapaswini. Okay, so she was always a form of austerities. She was a great, great sadhvi, and she was extremely pure. In fact, Madhavi Devi was amongst the 3.5 confidential, intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's how advanced Madhavi Devi was. So you probably know that the 3 are Swarup Damodar, Ramanand Rai, Shikhi Mahiti, and the half is his sister. Because she is the sister, therefore she's the half. Okay? Because Mahaprabhu is sannyasi. So 3.5 intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chota Haridas Thakur went to the home, begged for rice. Begging actually is part of the culture of a vairagi. Vairagi can be either a brahmacharya or a sannyasi. Vairagi basically means one who is renounced. So when you take on the role of a renunciate, there are ways in which you interact with society. So one of them is that you beg. You don't ask for food. You beg for food. You don't demand. You don't ask for food. That adhikar has already been taken from a vairagi. Because by begging, one then becomes more humble, and also in that way to set an example as well. Yesterday, Radhaman Swami mentioned about cook as well, that sannyasis wouldn't cook. And one of the reasons for that is because agni, which is the monopoly of the grihasthas, is removed from a sannyasi. So sannyasi is not allowed to touch fire. That's the whole point. Through fire, there are 2 things which are covered according to the Dharma Shastras. The first thing is that one gains opulence through fire. If you have some rice, you can boil it. If you have some vegetables, you can cook it. If you have some paneer, you can fry it. Okay, so fire allows one to imbibe opulence in their life through the agency of food. Fire is also used to create homes, bricks, etc. And one's general life of opulence is based around fire. Therefore, fire is not allowed to be touched by the vairagis. And then the second part is cooking. That fire, once again, because of the renounced order of life, a vairagi would try their best to eat as simple as possible. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam, you probably read regularly that people will eat what they call roots and fruits. So therefore, the purpose of that is because fire is not allowed to be used for a vairagi. So is this clear? This is why they don't cook. This is why they have somebody else to cook for them. The main part is not touching fire, which comes on to the second reason. The second reason of fire is the advancement of the grihastha ashram, free the performance of yag and samskaras. And therefore, because a sannyasi doesn't perform samskaras and yag, therefore, again, they don't touch fire. You see, so these are really the 2 reasons why vairagis do not interact with fire. And coming to the point of yesterday's purport about why a sannyasi doesn't cook from this perspective. So here we're just talking about the laws and the orders of the Varnashram Dharma. Okay? I'm not asking you to think about your own circle of application and the community application of this. So he begged for the rice. The rice was given. He took it back to Bhagwan Acharya, and Bhagwan Acharya cooked a beautiful feast. And the first thing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu noticed about the feast was how beautiful the white rice is. And it said in the Sanskrit, Prashamsa. He glorified the white rice. This is wonderful. This white rice is wonderful. So then obviously, if you have some nice prasad, you want to know where it came from. Yeah. Manor, Soho Street, where did it come from? Puri, Radhraman Temple. So he asked Bhagwan Acharya, so where did this rice come from? And Bhagwan Acharya, it was begged from the house of Madhavi. It's interesting. He uses the word, it was begged from the house of Madhavi. He was implying that he purchased the rice. He was the one who collected the rice through that sentence that he used. So you can see that there was some covering up being done at this point, because there was something which was not correct from the very beginning, which is why he asked Chota Haridas, you go and ask in my name. So then, Mahaprabhu, obviously, is very smart. Okay. And he said that, who begged? Who begged for the rice? And that's when Bhagavan Acharya said, Chota Haridas begged for the rice. Mahaprabhu did not react negatively at all. In fact, he started to glorify the rice even more. He started saying how wonderful this rice is. And then he finished his entire prasad, and he went back to his quarters, where Govinda was waiting for him, to render him personal service. And it was at that point where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Govinda, from this day onwards, please ensure that Chota Haridas Thakur does not approach me. Okay, so this was the time. So Govinda's just confused. Just enjoyed the rice that was begged by Chota Haridas, and now you're demanding that he must not come and approach you. Chota Haridas Thakur, he found out about this, and he fasted for 3 days. He didn't question why this has been ordered against him by his Lord. Now, Chota Haridas Thakur, remember, he was singing every day to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was very disappointed that this service was taken away from him. And therefore, in that lamentation, he was unable to eat. It wasn't that he fasted because he felt, you know, this is my parachit, this is my penance, this is the way I'm going to absolve my sin and attract the mercy of Mahaprabhu. He didn't fast for that reason. He fasted because he was lamenting. He had nothing else to do apart from lament, that he's not able to now sing for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in doing so, he hadn't eaten, he hadn't drunk anything for 3 days and nights. So just trying to understand the context of the love that his servant had towards his Lord. So the devotees became really concerned that Chota Haridas hasn't eaten or drunk for 3 days, 3 nights. Chota Haridas was not the one who asked the devotees to go and beg on his behalf to be redeemed and replaced back in his service. The devotees were the ones who naturally, after their compassion for another devotee, felt that they should make an appeal to Chaitanya. It was Swarup Damodar, the secretary, one of the most intimate associates of the 3.5, who approached Mahaprabhu. And he said to Mahaprabhu, this was a very, very small offense. For a Vairagi to ask a lady for rice on behalf of the cook, for your prasad. That was the only offense. So therefore, you please forgive him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he basically said that I can't tolerate seeing the face of a Vairagi who does, and Maharaj said this yesterday, Prakriti Sambhashan. Okay? So Prakriti Sambhashan, which is conversing with a lady. So this was what was mentioned. Now, what's very important to note is that in this pastime, it would be very unfair for anyone to think that the object of the rejection is a lady. This is not the case. Okay? It is not because of a lady that all this is being done. This is a very important point to mention. Okay? It is the fact that there is some laws in somebody's ashram that is causing the problem. Because we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita that those who were in the ashram that are allowed to interact with other people of society like Ramananda Rai, etc., Advaita Acharya, there was absolutely no problem. They were sitting, dining, eating, they had some intimate connections with ladies as well, and there was no problem there. So the context to be understood is not because of the female that this is going on. In the Vedic culture, the female is that person who just by looking at one becomes pure. It's the replacement of Achman. Right? This is mentioned by Atri Samhita, Rishi Atri. So the female energy is obviously a very, very highly worshipped gender in the Vedic culture, which is why females are the gender which do not require samskaras. You don't have samskaras for females because they're already pure. Okay? The samskaras are only for the males because they're impure. And therefore the males have to go through 16 samskaras. Which is why in the Dharma Shastras you find that the only samskara for a female is the vivaha. And what is the vivaha? The vivaha is the samskara which takes a person to the feet of Krishna. That's what the word vivaha means. In English we call it marriage, but it doesn't exist. The word marriage doesn't exist in the Vedic culture. Huh? It's a process by which a female attains the companion of Lord Krishna. And the vivaha, the yajaman is the bride, as well as the recipient of the vows is the bride. There is no vows for the male. He only assists the female in her destination to Krishna. That's actually vivaha, which we call marriage in the Vedic. I won't go on about this. But if you feel that the issue is the lady, then it actually means that you don't really know what the role of a lady is in Vedic culture. You may know what the role of a lady is in Western society or in your own society, but not in the Vedic culture. Okay, I'm just trying to make this point very clear. And that is the culture which is followed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There is no doubt about that whatsoever. There is no Western influence. There is only very, very hardcore Vedic culture being followed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and by the personalities in the Itihasas. So therefore this point is never a point which is contemplated as the cause of the entire rejection. I'm making this point clear a few times just to make sure that it goes in one ear and doesn't come out the other. Okay? So in this context now, Mahaprabhu, when he had made it very clear that he doesn't want to see the face of a Vairagi who does Prakriti Sambhashana, he then said, look, if you're going to keep asking me this question, I'll just leave. Okay, because it's very disturbing me. He actually said that my mind is not in my control at this point. He said this. Huh? So then Swarup Damodar said, okay, fine. And that's when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he quoted that famous verse in the Manu Samhita. The Manu Samhita is the one of the 18 books of the laws of mankind who follow the path of Krishna. And Manu explains in the second chapter. It's second chapter, for those who may have read Manu Samhita, second chapter is about the brahmachari taking upanayana, the sacred thread. And then in the Manu Samhita, in second chapter, the description is given about the various laws of culture. So therefore the verse that I'm about to quote is the verse that Mahaprabhu quoted to Swarup Damodar. And before I quote that verse, you have to understand the context of that verse. Okay, the female gender and the laws according to Manu Samhita are given in the other chapters of Manu, such as the 5th, 11th, and possibly also some in the 9th. This chapter is about the laws for Vairagi. And therefore, don't be enamored, okay, by the translation. I'm just going to tell you what the translation is. And this is the quote that Mahaprabhu used to Swarup Damodar. He said that one should not sit closely with one's mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that it may even attract an advanced person in knowledge. So this was the verse that Mahaprabhu quoted from Manu in reference to why he doesn't want to see the face of a Vairagi who does Prakriti Sambhashana. Okay? End of verse. Let's move on. Alright? So this is the verse that was being used. And then after that, Mahaprabhu, he spoke about the Markata Vairagi, which was also mentioned yesterday. The Markata means the monkey renunciates, who jump around everywhere, and they indiscriminately interact with society, just like monkeys. Okay, I'm not going to say anything more than that, because I don't have the experience or the right to speak further on about this particular word. But this is where Mahaprabhu spoke about a Markata Vairagi, one who doesn't really follow the orders of the renounced order of the life of the renounced order. So Mahaprabhu, he left this conversation, and Swarup Damodar also left his association at this point, and end of story. However, the rest of the devotees were not satisfied. So they all came together and they pleaded with Mahaprabhu once again the very next day that you should please accept Chota Haridas back in your service. And that's when Mahaprabhu said that if you don't give up this useless talk, then I'm leaving. And I would never be seen ever again by any of you. That's when the devotees thought, you know what, this is enough. We don't want to lose the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is why we would leave it. However, still the devotees were not satisfied. And therefore they ask somebody who is considered to be the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Paramananda Puri. And they ask Paramananda Puri, can you please go, and you go and ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to accept Chota Haridas. So, some time passed, and this request was made by Paramananda Puri. Now, Paramananda Puri, when he asked Mahaprabhu this request, just previous to this, Mahaprabhu offered his Dandavat pranams to him. And Mahaprabhu said to him that whatever you say, I will do. So already Mahaprabhu was already establishing the relationship he has with his seniors. And that's when Paramananda Puri asked that, why don't you please accept Chota Haridas back? And that's when Mahaprabhu, he didn't answer the question. You know, sometimes you don't answer the question. He didn't answer the question. He said, you know, actually, I think I should leave. Okay, and he called to Govinda. He said, Govinda, let's go. So Mahaprabhu, he offered his obeisances, and he left the residence, and he walked out with Govinda. That was the answer to the request of Paramananda Puri to accept Chota Haridas. So when Mahaprabhu had left with Govinda, Paramananda Puri, he ran after him and he held him and he said, please don't go. Just come back to your home. Come back to your residence. And in that way, even the last straw of asking for an appeal was ended. In this way, Chota Haridas, he simply started to watch Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from a distance. So when Mahaprabhu would go for darshan to the Puri temple, from a distance, Chota Haridas would watch him. And in this way, an entire year had passed. An entire year had passed. Imagine, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you're that one person in the entire universe who can't approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when Mahaprabhu was at Jagannath Puri, Kaviraj Goswami explains that the entire celestials, the Gandharvas, the Nagas, the Kinnars, they all used to come to see Mahaprabhu. So really, he was the only person in the entire universe who was not allowed to approach Lord Chaitanya. So just imagine, if you try to contemplate what he must have gone through. Therefore, from a long distance, he would see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. A year had gone by, and that's when Chota Haridas decided that he's going to now definitely attain the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. 3 days went by, an entire year went by, enough. Now I'm going to attain the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chota Haridas, he went to Mahaprabhu, again, kept a little bit of a distance. He offered his obeisances to him, without saying anything, he got up, and he headed for Prayag. In Prayag, he entered into the Triveni, which is where the Ganga, Yamuna, Ganga Saraswati and the Yamuna meet. And when he entered into the Triveni, it is said he gave up his life. So this is something which only very powerful yogis and rishis and those type of associates can do. The avatars of Lord Krishna and Lord Ram, when they left this world, they didn't die. They were able to give up their life. So in the Bengali and the Sanskrit, which is used, it is said, prana choriya. He gave up his life. Okay. So we use the word suicide, but actually the suicide, in my understanding, is not the best way to describe it. We use this word in English to translate the word. But actually, Chota Haridas Thakur was able to give up his life in this sacred place of Prayag. And it said in the Sanskrit, in the Bengali of this verse, in Antirila, kshane. Immediately, when Chota Haridas gave up his life, immediately he entered into his spiritual body. And his spiritual body, as the musician of Lord Chaitanya, was resemblance of a Gandharva. And then Chota Haridas, he immediately entered into his spiritual body and went directly, right away, to Lord Chaitanya to resume his service. And from that moment, every night and every day, Chota Haridas would perform his service to sing to Lord Chaitanya. And nobody knew this apart from Lord Chaitanya. And in this way, Chota Haridas, he gained the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had used him for a particular reason. And in using Chota Haridas temporarily, he then gave him his unalloyed service once again. Now, the devotees were obviously missing the association of Chota Haridas, which is why they were inquiring regularly about Chota Haridas. And in this way, nobody really was able to understand what had happened to him. Apart from one devotee who had returned from Prayag, and he told Srivas Thakur that Chota Haridas had entered into the Triveni at Prayag, and in that way, he never came out. When Srivas Thakur had heard this, just a few days earlier, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to his devotees, "Where is Chota Haridas? Please now bring him to me. It's enough. Yeah, the time has gone by. I've given up my angry mood. Please now bring Chota Haridas to me." And the devotee said, "We don't know where he is. He just vanished. No one has a clue." And then it was days later when Srivas Thakur asked the same question to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, "Where is Haridas, Chota Haridas?" He said to Mahaprabhu, "Where is Chota Haridas? What have you done to him?" And that's when Mahaprabhu didn't say anything. And then Srivas Thakur said, "I had just heard from a devotee who visited Prayag. He's now back from into Navadvip, and he had reported that Chota Haridas entered into the Triveni." When Mahaprabhu heard this, he done one of his mild smiles. Okay? Mild smiles. And in this way, the devotees just got really confused. They didn't know what was going on. And Mahaprabhu knew what had happened to him, and nobody else had known. And then what happened once, a few days later, a number of associates of Mahaprabhu, Swarup, Govinda and Mukunda and others, they went to bathe in the river. And when they went to bathe in the river, they heard the singing of Chota Haridas. The same melody, the same tune, the unique tune that only he knew. They were listening. And Govinda said, "There's a ghost. There must be a ghost. Haridas must have committed suicide and he must have become a Brahma Rakshas. Because we are hearing in daytime the singing of Chota Haridas." That's when Swarup Damodara said, "You're absolutely incorrect. Firstly, Chota Haridas would always sing the Maha Mantra. Secondly, he would sing to Mahaprabhu. He was one of his favorite singers. Thirdly, he gave up his body in Prayag. So there is no way that Chota Haridas has become a ghost. So give up that idea. In fact, Chota Haridas has definitely received the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he is a pure liberated soul." So in this way, the devotees then understood about what had happened to Chota Haridas. And in the end of this chapter, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he gives 7 points as to what we can learn from this pastime. And I'm not going to go through those because of the time limits, but you can all read those in your own time if you wish to do so. But one of the main points was that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu only used his most intimate associates to perform some of the most very difficult pastimes, to set an example, to share values and ethics and expectations that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has for devotees. And also, the fact is that these personalities who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu uses through his own intimate pastimes, they always end up attaining the direct, analoid, pure service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They get a very great boon, which is not really available to others who are not part of the intimate pastimes of the Lord. So there are 7 points that I mentioned, which you can read in your own time. But what's interesting to note is that this aspect where the Lord rejects somebody, you find only takes place with those personalities who are very intimately connected with the Lord. And one of the examples that comes to mind, because we are now approaching the month of Kartik, where a lot of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, which culminates in the festival of Deepavali, you know, people are now going to be, especially ourselves and even myself, we start to contemplate the pastime of Diwali and how Lord Ramachandra is the object of Divamayana. So you find that Lord Ram was one of those personalities who also did the same. He rejected his most intimate companion, his wife Sita, in very similar situations. And we can understand that when Lord Ram rejected his wife Sita, there were grounds for that as well. And the Lord only uses his most intimate companions to perform such a difficult pastime. So when we think of Chota Haridas and Sita, we can think about how elevated they were. And this is what I believe yesterday's class was trying to share with us as well. And yesterday even Maharaj mentioned that we can't discriminate the various branches of the Chaitanya tree. They're all equal from that perspective. And Chota Haridas is also one of those branches. So we have to understand that he was always pure, always liberated, and he was used as an agent of the Lord, of Mahaprabhu. In the pastime of Ramayana, when Lord Ramachandra, let's just try to understand a few moments the context and the background, and we can make some similarities, or you can make some similarities, a parallel with this pastime we just spoken about, and the rejection of Lord Ram with Sita. When Lord Ramachandra had returned back to Ayodhya, for 10,000 years, he had remained with Sita. And then they entered into their own Ashoka forest. They had their own Ashoka forest, the forest of Ashoka trees. And it was in that situation that Sita had become pregnant. And when Sita became pregnant, Lord Ram, who is very intimately connected with Sita, especially given the pastimes of the Vanavas, or the exile to the forest of Dandakaranya, Lord Ram, he asked his wife, that do you have any special wish you would like to ask of me? Because in the Vedic culture, when a lady is pregnant, then the husbands unfortunately have to change night and day in order to satisfy their needs, because the mood and the happiness of the wife is what's going to be reflective on the future of the baby, of the child. Therefore, Lord Ramchandra, understanding this, he asked Sita, is there anything that you would like? And Sita said, I would love to spend some time in the ashram of the brahmanas, the devotees and the rishis. So Lord Ramchandra said, that's a very good idea. Because she wanted her children to be raised in a very, very pure environment, not an environment of the monarchy, where, you know, law and orders are passed and judgment is made, and there are all of these situations of the citizens. So Sita had this very pure desire, that may my children be raised in the ashram of devotees, brahmanas and rishis, the renunciates. Which is an interesting point, because in the Vedic culture, every child, no matter what varna they're from, are all renunciates from the age of 7 to at least the end of teenage years, which is a very interesting point. Only then do they go into the world of opulence, if they're from that background or not. So then, Sita, when she asked this request, Lord Ram had said, your request is it's so nice, I'm going to make sure that tomorrow you go to the hermitage of the rishis. So Lord Ramchandra had said this. Little did he know, at least from the pastime perspective, the circumstances which will make his word come true, that the very next day Sita will be taken to the forest. So Lord Ramchandra, he left his intimate chambers and went into the Valmiki Rishi describes the middle chamber. When he went into the middle chamber, he was surrounded by his friends and his counselors. So Lord Ram, while hearing, he was being entertained. His counselors and his friends were telling Lord Ram about amusing stories, about what's going on in the land of Ayodhya and the wider country of India, Aryadesh. And while he was hearing these stories, Lord Ram asked one of his favorite counselors, Bhadra. He said to Bhadra, just to ask a question, what do people think about me? You know, it's nice to know, as the king of Ayodhya, what the impression is of me in society. Bhadra said, everybody loves you. They think so greatness of you. Your wife and your brothers, they're examples of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Every single person understands this. You destroyed Lankapati Ravana. You completely cleansed this world of sinful and evil people. Everybody loves you in the state of Ayodhya. Lord Ram said, but is there anything, Bhadra, that may be something which is just spoken of amongst a few people? Bhadra then said, okay, there are some spaces in Ayodhya, such as the markets, the public roads, the forests, and the gardens. Okay, so these are places where people just hang around. Okay, there's no serious conversations going on. People lounge around, they go to the market, they're shopping, they're bartering, They go to the garden, they sunbathe, you know, they just loiter around. Badra said, in those places, some people, they say how interesting it is that our Lord Ram didn't even think twice about bringing Sita back to Ayodhya and placing her upon the Simhasana of the dynasty that Lord Ramchandra belongs to, the Raghu dynasty, the dynasty of Kukutsa, such an elevated Ikshvaku dynasty. He didn't even think twice, because we all know, we've heard, that Ravana had taken Sita upon his lap and taken her all the way to Lanka. So, you know, that's really the only gossip that's going on about even the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Can you imagine the kind of gossip that goes on about ordinary people? So Lord Ramchandra, when he heard this, he became very upset. He became very, very, very disappointed. And he dismissed his friends and his counselors. Badra was thinking, what did I just say? You know, Lord Ram, he prompted me again and again and again. And that's when I had to reveal to him the things that are being said in crazy places, not in the houses, in the temples and the monasteries, in other gatherings, crazy places. I just told him something very small amongst silly people. And even in the Bhagavatam, the words used are murka, that idiots, silly people. Okay, these are the words of those people. So you don't really consider their words serious. Okay, murka has many other definitions, which I won't use because of the deity and yourselves are here. But it's a very horrible word, okay, for not nice people. So Lord Ramchandra dismissed his ministers and counselors, and he called for his brothers, Lakshmana, Bharat, and Shatrughna. Immediately, they got up on their chariots. They heard the messenger ask for them. Lord Ram would like an audience, and they all gathered in the chamber of Lord Ram. When they saw Lord Ram, two things they had noticed. His entire body was drenched with water because he was crying. And the second thing is that, now I don't know how much you may know about the importance of eclipses in the Vedic culture, okay? But eclipses are very serious things, which I'm not going to speak about now. And Lord Ram was being compared to the sun, which has been eclipsed by Rahu. This is what the brothers saw, that only ill omens, ill fortune, negative energy, malefic energies, sin, all of the negative elements were surrounding Lord Ramchandra in personified forms. This is what they saw when they came to Lord Ram. It was at that point that they were wondering, you know, what has happened. And Lord Ram said, I have never had this much grief in my entire life compared to now. Not even the grief of losing my wife in Dandakaranya. This is the most difficult part in my entire life. And Lord Ram, you see, the respect is that for young people, young people don't actually speak so much in front of elders. Okay, this is the Vedic cultural respect. You don't really speak so much. You just listen, you listen, and you listen. And if you're asked to speak, then you say something. You don't just try to, you know, hug, pat, console them. You don't become friends. That relationship isn't there. You're very, very respectful. And you just wait for the senior to completely finish what they want to say. You don't interrupt as well. So Bharat Shatrughna, they just put their heads down and they were just listening. And then Lord Ramchandra started to speak to himself. He said, in days of yore, when I had recovered Sita, the sun, the moon, the stars, they all came to me and they all confirmed the purity of Sita. Even after she entered fire. And even then I was not convinced, despite Surya, Chandra and the celestials, Mother Earth and fire, I was still not convinced of her purity. That is when the Lord of the Celestials, Rajadiraj Indra, appeared and placed the hand of Sita in my hand. That is when I accepted Sita. I did not accept her just because of my love towards her, or just because she entered fire, or just because of one or two celestials. Even Lord Brahma had appeared. It was in that circumstance that I had taken back Sita, because I knew this would not be completely correct. Now, Lord Ram, it's very nice for sometimes to say that Lord Ram is the idol person, but when you read the Ramayana, you find that actually Lord Ram, first and foremost, was the idol Kshatriya, the idol monarch. This is actually his primary duty. And if we understand that Lord Ram was the ideal monarch, then from the monarchical level, there are many sacrifices and yogdhan which one has to do. When you're a monarch, you have no wife, no children, no parents, no society. You have nothing at all. All you are is a servant of society. You're a person who lives for society. Whatever you do is to only set an example for society. That is actually your family. It is not your blood relatives. And therefore, Lord Ram had said that for the purity of the monarchical level, because in the Vedic culture, the monarch is the representation of God, the king and the queen. And therefore, Lord Ram had said that in order to keep society pure, I have no problem giving up Sita. I have no problem giving up Bharat, Lakshman, Shatrughan. I have no problem giving up anybody who is connected to me. I just have to make sure that the right example is being set for a king. Now, the next yuga, it was this very reason why the Mahabharata took place. Lord Ram had come to set the example of a king. And even then, kings did not follow him. Some did, obviously. In fact, most did. But there was one particular king who even he vowed to follow Lord Ram, which was Dhritarashtra. And because of that, we had the massacre and the entire change of the entire planet was changed after the Mahabharata, which is why Lord Krishna had to personally descend in order to orchestrate the Mahabharata, because of Dhritarashtra's mahatvakanksha, his personal ambition, that Lord Ram had from the very beginning cut. If you are king, you have no personal ambition, you have no gain, you have no losses. You are simply a servant of society, nothing more, nothing less. And in this way, Lord Ram had said to Lakshmana that tomorrow, I would like you to take Sita beyond the Ganga into the ashram of Valmiki and leave her there. After Lord Ram had said this, he collapsed onto the floor and he slowly, slowly walked away. His brothers had no idea what to do with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as you probably normally would do. And in that way, Lakshmana, with a very heavy heart, he went back to his abode. They weren't living in the same house, okay, like the film show. They had their own palaces. That was the greatness of the kingdom during those days. They went back to their abode, and Lakshmana, the very next morning, he went to Sita. Sita was very excited to know that Lord Ram has kept his word. She gathered her clothes, her ornaments, her best jewelry, and she said to Lakshmana, you know what, I'm going to give all of these away to the wives of the brahmanas and the rishis. So this is what was her reaction. And Sita, she then was led by Lakshmana onto the chariot, and off they went to the Bhagirathi, or the Ganga. As they were going to the Ganga, Mother Sita had noticed that on her right side, her eyes and her body, her eyes were flickering, her eyeball was flickering, her eyelid and her body was trembling on the right. So for a female, it's considered to be an inauspicious omen. And then also there were many other types of signs, such as very specific creatures were passing her to the south, Mrityustan, the direction of death. So in this way, Sita, she knew something isn't right. Something is going to go wrong, or something is just not working. So she asked Lakshman, is everything okay in Ayodhya? Is Lord Ram okay? Are the people of Ayodhya okay? Has anybody died? Because during Lord Ram's time, nobody would die. Nobody had diseases. Everybody was very happy. So she asked, is somebody not happy in Ayodhya? Can you imagine? Millions of people. Is one of them not happy? She's asking these questions. How come there are ill omens I can see and view? Lakshmana just kept on going. He just did not say anything. Lakshman had held in his heart so much grief to be performing this service on behalf of Lord Ram, to perform this order. He was so upset. And he was just holding on to his life, ignoring Mother Sita. And finally, that evening, they reached the Bhagirathi. And once they reached the river Bhagirathi, that's when Lakshmana just let go and he began to wail. He was sobbing, he was crying uncontrollably. He was not able to hold back his tears. His limbs were just extending. His dhoti, his chadar, was falling off him. His helmet had already fallen onto the floor. He was uncontrollably crying. And Sita was thinking, you know, what's happened? What is wrong? Sita said, only 2 days have passed since you haven't seen Lord Ram. Is that why you're crying? This is what she asked. I know how attached you are to Lord Ram, but why are you crying so uncontrollably? And Lakshman didn't say anything. He just continued to cry. He was very upset. The next morning, when they woke, that is when he escorted Sita once again onto the chariot, and they headed to the other side, the banks of the Bhagirathi. That is when Lakshmana asked his charioteer to stay there with the chariots. He asked for a nau, a boat, to come forward, and he asked the nauka, the boatman, to take Lakshman himself, Sita, across the river. And as he was doing so, Lakshman again was holding back his disappointment, and that's when he said to her that on the other side of the Bhagirathi, I've been asked to leave you there. And Sita said, yeah, it's completely fine, no problem. You know, I can make my own way back. I have the chariot. And that's when Lakshman said, no, actually. And Sita was saying, what is on your mind? What is the problem? And that's when Lakshmana said those famous words. He said, it pierces my heart like a dart that my brother, by making me the instrument of this terrible action, has made me the object of censor in this world for all time and all place. That's what Lakshman, the first time Lakshman said, and the only time, the first and the only time that Lakshman had said something about his older brother in some kind of negative connotation. So this was those famous words that Lakshmana had used. Lakshmana then, he sat on the boat and he closed his eyes and he started to meditate upon Yamaraj. And he was meditating upon Yamaraj, saying to Yamaraj, O Lord of Death, come to me. O Lord of Death, come to me. Lakshmana was praying for death. Yamaraj was trying his best not to leave his abode and go to Lakshmana and end his life. He was being pulled back by his own desires of not ending Lakshmana's life. And from the other end, like a kshatriya pulls the string of a bow, Lakshmana was dragging Yamaraj from his abode onto the boat in order to kill him. And this was a fight going on between Lakshmana and Yamaraj. Lakshmana wanted to die, and Yamaraj did not want to kill him. This was the fight going on that boat. Imagine the state of Sita. So that's when Sita, when she heard this, they had come out the boat, and that's when Sita said to Lakshman, I don't really understand anything. She said, what am I to tell the society if they ask me, why are you alone? What am I to say to my children? What am I to say to society? And in this way, Sita decided that, okay, that's fine. I would enter into the Ganga and I would give up my life. So this was Sita's response. That it's fine. I would just give up my life in the very same way that Chota Haridas had done so. So Sita was on her way to enter into the Ganga. And as she made her way into the Ganga, somewhere or another, she thought of the following words. She actually said to herself that my life is simply to serve Lord Ram. If Lord Ram would like me not to be in association any longer, then I won't do so. But at the same time, I don't want to do any actions that may further upset Lord Ram. That is when Sita resolved not to enter into the Ganga. Otherwise, she was just about to enter into the Ganga.
In the same way that Chota Haridas felt this is the way to attain Mahaprabhu, similarly Sita felt by keeping onto her life and forming her service of following the order of Lord Ram and to raise her children in the ashram of Valmiki, and in doing so, making Valmiki the only rishi in the entire history of the universe to be that personality that had an intimate service to Shri. The only person who was allowed to intimately serve the consort of the Supreme Lord Narayana, Krishna, Lord Ram, was Valmiki Rishi. No other rishi has been given that benediction. So in order to benedict Valmiki, also one of the reasons why Sita did not enter into the river Ganga, and instead she kept on hold onto her life. Lakshmana left Sita on the boat and he kept looking back. And before looking back, Sita had said one very, very important word. She said to Lakshmana that you go back to Lord Ram. But before you go back, have you noticed that I'm pregnant? This is what she asked Lakshmana. She wanted to just make Lakshmana very aware of the circumstances in which she has been abandoned. Lakshmana then said to Sita, how can I look at your body? Neither is Lord Ram here, and we're in a solitary forest. What to speak of looking at your body today, I've never seen anything above your feet. So there's no way that I'm even going to follow your request for me to notice that you're pregnant. It's interesting how Lakshmana never crossed his limits as a servant of the Lord. He always remained in his circle of maryada. Even if crossing the limit was going to be helpful, Lakshman still did not cross the limit. It's interesting how sometimes we may take the responsibility, we may feel as if, you know what, I'm going to break the walls because for a higher purpose. We all have our own karma to repay, we all have our own reactions, and we can do what we want. But Lakshman didn't do this. What's very interesting is even when Lord Ram was in a very aggrieved condition, when he had said to Lakshmana, let us find a sign, a symbol, that indicates to us the direction in which Sita has been kidnapped. When Lord Ram had found the abhushana, the ornaments of Sita, and he said to Lakshmana, just second it. Do you recognize these ornaments of Sita? Just so we know that these ornaments are Sita's, and maybe this is the direction that she's gone in. Lakshmana said, Naham janami kayure, naham janami kundare, nupure bijanami nityam chanabhi vandanat. I don't recognize the anklets, the armlets, the jewelry of Sita, because I've always only kept my eye on her feet. So that's what he said in the forest of Dandakaranya when Sita was abducted. And he still maintained that even after, at the time where he left Sita. And that's when Lakshmana entered the boat, left the other side of the Bhagirathi, and Sita collapsed on the floor. She began to cry. And that's when the sons of the rishis noticed her and went and reported this incident to Valmiki. And after that, you know the story of what took place. So in this way, I've tried to show a similarity between Chota Haridas and Sita in the way that the Lord's most intimate associates are used in order to perform very, very difficult pastimes and set an example to extend the purpose of the Lord's advent in this world. So that's my humble attempt of trying to elaborate a little bit on this pastime with reference to Chota Haridas. I have no idea about the Bada Haridas, so I haven't said anything, but thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.